Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hi, I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies. And we are very happy to be sitting opposite the lovely and talented Molly Quinn.
Hello.
Molly C. Quinn.
Now, do you prefer being called Molly C. Quinn, as I see you build sometimes?
It doesn't matter. The only reason there's a separate bell why I am technically, according to IMDb, Molly C. Quinn, is because there was already a Molly Quinn who did one thing in like 1988.
Never said Molly Sequin out loud to realize that it becomes Sequin.
Yeah, it's my gin and the
that's fantastic.
Yeah,
my mind is blown. I'm sitting in my mind.
Well,
is
yeah,
blown.
because she's Miss Sequin.
Yes.
This is Jesse the Bedazzler.
That's right. That would be my Western
meaning
name.
To her.
My Western name. All the Bedazzlers.
Now, if you don't know Molly's name right off the top of your head. You've not seen a show that was on the air for, what, 7 seasons?
Eight
seasons. Don't let me undersell you. Castle.
Yeah.
Because she's been the co-star of Castle, playing Nathan Fillion's daughter, mm-hmm. and very successful at that. And that has opened other doors for you.
Sure.
And you've done a wide variety of things. And we met... Where else do you meet people, right?
Mm-hmm.
At San Diego Comic-Con several years ago.
Gary Marino.
That's specifically, though, at Ghirardelli's, which is how we knew that
right.
we would be friends.
Mm-hmm. That's
well, that's
right.
the only place you can find Gary, too.
That is
that's
true.
Right.
So that is fair.
Gotta
that
get
is
there
fair.
To see the Gare yep. Bear it's, and then to meet you lovely guys.
I love it. And the reason that you hold a place in my heart is that when my mother accosted you to ask you questions about Castle, which is how that went.
I don't even remember that.
Oh, see, well.
There would be no reason for you to remember.
You don't remember.
Fans come up and ask you questions all the time.
It's amazing. I do the same thing. I meet people that I love and I cry. Still, to this day, I meet people and I can't help it. I just get so overly excited.
I'm totally okay with that.
I lose my mind.
Now, Alice, she's now been on the show, so people had a taste of the powerhouse that is my tiny mother.
Mm-hmm.
But she has, the only time I saw her attack someone quite the way she went for you, and I say attack as in smother with questions.
Sure.
We were at a hair salon and somebody came in who was on Deadwood.
Oh.
And my mother immediately went to him and just said, why did you do that? Why did that happen? Why did that? And I was, right, it's one of those
on,
like.
Let's move on.
One of those where you just
Molly's obviously
a shell.
Moved on. Why don't we move on?
But that adds to my admiration.
Well,
anyway,
I'll tell you
but
she has good taste. Deadwood, great show.
Right?
That's true.
And Castle. Loves her,
wonderful
the Castle.
Show.
Oh, thank you.
So welcome.
Thank you very much.
I'm very happy to have you here. And you are obviously smart, bright person. And we thought, well, let's have that smart, bright person as a guest because she'd probably be interesting to talk to.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I admire you so much, Mr.
Maltin. Aw, shucks. No, that please, I was, and call me Leonard.
But I was driving here doing, do I call him Leonard or do I call him Mr. Maltin? Because he, you know, you're someone that, you're the only reviews that I read. You're the only ones that I trust. Everything that you have said, I have really followed, and I've never been steered wrong. So
to quote the late, great Milton Berle, don't stop. but that's very kind of you. Thank you for those lovely compliments.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Our pleasure. And I'm sorry to say, I have not seen Hansel and Gretel Get Baked. Which is one of your major screen credits. Okay.
Is that one of my major screen credits?
I think it is.
I think it is. I would think so. You are the co-star.
Oh, my
God. You play one of the title roles.
Is that the one Andrew Allen is in?
Yes.
Yeah.
What a strange name to bring up.
I've known him since he was 14.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, the Oakwood kids. Were you ever an Oakwood kid?
No. Even saying that, I'm sorry to say, gives me the cringes.
I understand.
I was very much... I was very lucky, and then the people that first brought me out, Cindy Osbrink at Osbrink Agency, told me where I could stay and where I should not.
Were you out from your...
Texarkana, Texas.
See, but you don't sound Texan.
I got into acting through speech therapy, because I had really muffled speech patterns. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, lisps and things like that, so it kind of eradicated the accent.
Well,
process.
Golly, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked, and it... made me feel alive, the acting that is.
Well,
know?
That's a wonderful thing. Yeah.
Have you ever read Me Talk Pretty One Day by David Sedaris?
Yes, I have, yeah.
As soon as anyone talks about speech impediments, I go to that book. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read Me Talk Pretty One Day by David Sedaris, do so. And don't do it in public because people will mock you. You'll be rolling on the floor laughing.
I don't know. I say read it in public because it is, you do get those reactions. And if you've never had that reaction from a book of laughing out loud.
It's wonderful.
All of his work is. He's really wonderful.
He sure is.
Mm-hmm. That's so.
Anyway, so some folks saw you in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And talent agents?
Yeah, it was. So I had started training when I was 6 years old with this retired director. He had worked in New York, mostly commercials and kind of some episodes of this and that. And his mother became ill. So he moved back to Texas. Huh. And Texarkana has quite a few really great hospitals. It's a kind of a medical town to take care of her. And he was bored in his spare time. He didn't have anything to do. So he started working with the local dance companies and putting on these performances at this, we have a Perot Theater built by Ross Perot for his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. It's gorgeous. It's this beautiful theater in, you know, this pretty small town. And we did everything there. Graduations, you know, all these little, not just like our nutcrackers and things like that, but just the dance, you know, recitals at the end of the year and everything like that. So I met him because he started directing these performances. And I just wanted to be a part of everything. You know, I danced, but I knew I wasn't very good. And I'm talking to you like, you know, 6 years old. I knew I wasn't very good, but I wanted to be there. I played violin, but I knew I just wasn't, or I felt like I was just missing something there. I drew, and I was terrible at that, but I loved art, and I wanted to do something in art. And at six, you can't exactly articulate it that way, but that was the feeling. There was an urge there that just, I couldn't quite get out. And then Martin, for the Nutcracker, asked if anyone would be interested in doing a speaking part, the opening little, you know, three-line speaking part. And my hand just shot up, because like I said, I just wanted to be in it. And I went up there, and I think one other girl auditioned, and I ended up doing it with Martin. And after that, he, in his own words to my parents, said, you know, I've never worked with a kid who takes direction as great as Molly. Can I give her acting lessons? Like, I need something to do, $40 a week. Acting helps with everything, public speaking, you know. I'm not trying to make her into a, you know, actor. You know, this could be for other things. And my parents said yes. And that urge was fulfilled. Like, I was so happy getting to work with him every week on whatever I wanted. Because that was the other thing. He never limited me. If I wanted to do, you know, Brad Pitt's monologue from Empire with Interview with a Vampire, he said yes. Like, there was never a question about anything I wanted to do. I could just do
How
it.
Cool.
And in a small town, that's really important as well, because there tend to be very specific roles that a woman
So you had two great building blocks, encouraging parents and a mentor.
Yes. I had a true mentor. And, you know, it's hard with mentors, and I think this is kind of a typical story at the same time. When I wanted to do more, I guess I was about 12 years old, and I wanted to continue pursuing it in a different way. Mm-hmm. Once again, I didn't know what that different way was. I knew the word agent. I knew I wanted that. Had no idea what it was. I just thought, I remember very distinctly walking at my Episcopal day school with my friend Shay Smith and just saying, yeah, I'm going to get an agent. And her being like, well, what do they do? And me saying, oh, well, they just get you jobs. They call you and they, you know, give you movies. That's what I thought an agent was. And anyway, badgered my parents enough and really badgered them. Both of them are medical professionals. My mother's an anesthesiologist. My father owns a biomedical engineering company. Really that type of personality. To the point where they found this little summer movie camp in Dallas that I could do. And it was really a great little camp. They filmed this whole little movie, you auditioned for it, and then they had a deal with an art house theater where they put it up for a night, and you got to go yourself
cool
on the big screen.
How cool is that?
Really great. So I was very excited, and I got there, and I auditioned for Linda Cito was the woman who ran the program. And she called my parents in and said, look, I never do this, which, you know, of course, is kind of the story of my life. I never do this. But we're having three agents in next week, and Molly really needs to meet these people. I've never met a kid so prepared, blah, blah, blah. Asked my parents. They say yes. And then I met Cindy Osbrink, and also Mary McCusker was there, a really great guy from CESD. Anyway, met them there, and I think I was the only kid that got signed. something like that. And
when you've got it, you've got it.
And did they?
I had it then.
And did they? And did they? What did they do? Did they encourage you to move to Los Angeles?
Cindy asked if I would give her a 2-year commitment, mm-hmm. and then we could reevaluate from there. Mm-hmm. My father said I couldn't go unless I already had work. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't enough to have an agent. I had to.
That's a reasonable thing for a parent to say.
It's a reasonable thing in that he thought it was impossible. He was giving me landmarks
yes,
that
yes.
were not really mm-hmm. attainable because he was a little afraid. And mm-hmm. that's kind of where Martin comes in too. Like, I think a lot of people's stories with their mentors, there comes a point where the mentor gets a little scared. You know, he mm-hmm. didn't want me to move out to LA. Mm-hmm. He thought I'd get hurt. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't stopped. I was surprised by Martin's reaction, but I just called Cindy and was like, hey, I gotta get a job first, so, you know, how do we do that? And she was like, no problem, I'll send you auditions, you know, you put them on VHS, and you know, FedEx them back. And did that, I think, only twice, and ended up booking this Disney pilot. I think they were remaking Saved by the Bell, I think is what it was. And I booked it, did not want to do it, but didn't tell my parents that. And then, we RV'd out to Los Angeles.
Wow.
When we unpacked the truck, we were supposed to go to Osbrink and sign the paperwork for me to do this show. And I told my dad I didn't want to do it. And I said, if I could book something without ever meeting any of these people, like, imagine what I can do in a room. Like, let me try. Like, just let me try for a year.
How old were you?
I was 12.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. And it was hard. And I still... You know, I was so excited at the time, but, you know, looking back, you think about everything else, and I can see it from my dad's perspective, you know, because mm-hmm.
of course.
He didn't stay, you know, my mother stayed with me, and
yeah.
He went back, and...
One of the
it's
things
very emotional.
Yeah.
You know,
I've
I mean, you're summoning up a very emotional time in your young life,
and
it's understandable that I mean that you know, and let's face it, actors' emotions are very close to the surface, and there it is. I mean, you know, that's a turning point.
Yeah, but and I didn't see it that way because I was 12.
No, of course not. You're 12.
Of course,
you look back and you say, "Oh my God, of course it was a big deal."
Well, that's for every friend I have and for all that I don't who were child actors, mm-hmm. what a lot of people in the outside world don't understand is that they had to come with an aunt, mm-hmm. an uncle, a grandparent, one of their parents, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and many times to support their child's dreams, mm-hmm. the parents ended up not legally but physically separated from each other.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed by it mm-hmm. because so many people do it willingly. And like Oakwood, for anyone who doesn't know what Oakwood is, Oakwood is one of those places where you can rent...
Oakwood Apartments.
Yes, Oakwood mm-hmm, Apartments, mm-hmm. which isn't a different name now.
I know, it's not called that anymore, yeah.
But it's you could stay there for 5 days in a fully furnished apartment. You could stay there for a month. You mm-hmm. could So people from the music industry, film industry, everybody, they lived there because studios would put them there. Or you
but all the
just
kids
for,
were wild.
They were.
Those were the wild kids.
Yeah,
I was afraid of that place.
During,
right?
And during TV pilot season,
they all came in.
Season.
They all came in.
When all these prospective shows get
I've talked about
filmed.
It before where I mm-hmm. had friends for like a month at a time and then they'd go back. It was like, oh crap, pilot season's over. They're all leaving again.
I went to one party at the Oakwoods and I remember the whole time I felt so bad. So bad that I had gone to a hot tub party at the Oakwood Apartments.
Oh, I was like one of the moms because all the parents and grandparents
are absent?
No. What they would always say to me is, oh, we always feel good when so-and-so is with you because we trust you, mm-hmm. which is the equivalent of I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed.
Sure.
When they say to me, you know, we're just, you know, we always feel good when they're with you mm-hmm. because nothing bad can happen.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Your kid's doing drugs, it ain't on me. child actor life is
It was a lot.
So you made a commitment.
Yeah, I made a commitment.
You're the one, and you made a daring decision. Mm-hmm. To not take the bird in the hand, the ready job.
I hated that. I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it.
And you started going out on readings.
Yeah, started going out on auditions, and I think the next week I got my SAG eligibility with a one-liner in Dewey Cox, the Walk Hard story.
Yep.
Yeah, that's how I got my SAG eligibility, which is very important because
that's Screen Actors Guild for those of you who don't speak the lingo.
And that's and that's fast. For some people, it can take ages because you have to get
Yeah, because people don't want to do the supposed paperwork. I always hated kind of hearing that silly excuse, but it's a thing, and that's fine. And I was lucky. And then I did little jobs. You know, I remember in the beginning being asked like, so do you want to go out for voiceover as well? I hadn't even thought about that. I just wanted, I wanted to be Dakota Fanning, which is why I signed with Cindy Osbourne, because she had discovered and had Dakota Fanning. I wanted to be on, you know, in Man on Fire and, you know, all of those films. So no, I didn't
And better ones than that.
Sure. I liked that film at the time, but I'm sure if I rewatched it, I would understand.
Not Dakota's fault.
No. Dakota was great in it. It was other things for sure. But anyway, yeah, so going out for cartoons and commercials in the beginning, which as a very pale, very white-looking redheaded girl, commercials were not my strong suit. You know, that wasn't something that I booked a lot. And then, God, some modeling in the beginning. It was all over the place. And you kind of try it all a little bit. And it's funny even putting it that way because I listened to Bruce Davison's podcast with you guys. And I mean, it makes life daunting for me because of everything that he has done. So the idea of talking about, oh, you know, pittered with this and that, his list goes on for...
Well, sure. Well, maybe in maybe in 40 years,
you'll be able to
accumulate a bunch of stories like that,
You're in your early 20s. You have much time.
Yeah.
I can't help but, I mean, I admire him so much, and getting to work with him in our last film, Last Rampage, was, I did that film to work with him.
Sure, yeah.
Good call.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, and I'm sure you'll laugh, I wanted to work with him because of Polly, because that's the movie that I watched when
Oh my.
Yeah. That's such a sweet film.
Yeah.
And no one remembers it exists.
No one remembers Polly. Everyone should. It's about a parent,
Polly.
Right?
I remember Buddy Hackett is in it. Yes, that's what I remember primarily.
That's a sweet film.
And and he even has, Bruce has a scene where a rat in the lab runs up his leg, which was their like kind of Willard.
Homage to Willard.
Homage to Willard. And of course, I hadn't seen Willard at the time, but I remember my mother saying, do you know why they did that? And this was before I was acting or anything. Mm-hmm. They did that because when he was little, he did a movie with rats. She didn't tell me the whole movie. But I just remember having that memory, not even seeing Willard yet, but like just kind of learning those little things way before... ever getting into show business. Anyway, and I told him that, like, when we finished our scenes together, I was like, you know, I loved you and Polly. Yeah, that's really the one for me.
But so did you have a sense of a turning point at this early stage? Was there something that happened or an audition that you booked a job and you said, oh, this is the start of something now. I'm onto something.
Maybe
or not. In
I think I'm still waiting for that.
Yeah.
I think, in a sense, you know, after trying all these things and voiceover was the biggest one because I didn't even, like I said, that didn't even cross my mind. I didn't know how cartoons were made or anything. I watched them, of course. You know, even loved some of them. But there came a point probably in the first 6 months where I did come back around to, I want to be a film actor. Like, that's why I came out. That's what I want to do. That's the type of quality work, subtle work that I want to work on. And it was about in the same week, the specific auditions were a little bit apart for Castle in this film called My One and Only that I auditioned for. But I booked them on the same day. And at that point, of course, I had just recently gotten a manager because Cindy had said, you know, it's time that you have someone that can kind of make those couple extra calls that we can't make. That's how managers were at least described to me is like, you know, as an agent, she had, let's say, 100 or, you know, couple hundred clients, right? And as much as she liked me, she has to call for everybody. And a manager should only have, you know, really 5 or less clients so that they can really, you know, drive it home and really root for you, really be you know, your personal cheerleader.
Yeah.
So I had just gotten Ellen Meyer, who was really wonderful. And she called and she was like, well, you have to do the castle, which is how she always called it. Yeah, you have to do the castle. You know, this is longevity. This is this and that. And I would, you know, listen very politely. I guess I was about 13 or so at the time. And I said, well, that's great. I'm going to do the movie. If you want me to do the show, work them out. Because that was thing. Well, you know, you can't do both. There's a little bit of a crossover. I said, I'm going to do the movie because I'm going to be a movie star. That's what I want. And this show is great. I really love Nathan Fillion in it. And it did feel like it would have that type of cinematic presence that film has. But I'm going to do the movie unless you can work them both out. And
how old were you at that point?
I just
got to keep going back to this.
I was 13, yeah. And I was leaving a Ralph Lauren shoot. I remember we were driving back from this Ralph Lauren commercial shoot, which was also very exciting for me because at the time I loved Ralph Lauren. And, yeah, going home. Very excited. And she got on the phone to Armin Bernstein, who happened to be, I think he was the executive producer on both of these projects. And he liked me enough to where he worked them out. And I went to Baltimore and I shot my one and only with Renee Zellweger and Richard Loncrane directed it. And then a week later I went to New York and did the pilot for Castle. And yeah, it was awesome. And I just kind of had all these lessons of like, stick to your guns, like do the thing that you really want to do and the rest will work out. Which is kind of a good lesson, and it can also set you up for failure a little bit when you're used to things working out for you in that
well,
very
that's
way.
The luck of the draw, isn't
it?
I mean, it's you can't tell.
Yeah.
You don't know. Hindsight is 20/20, but you don't know.
Well, it's sort of, you know, for that one waitress that actually does get discovered, there's how many thousands of others that won't.
Yeah.
And you just have to be we always talk about that because so much when we speak to different people, luck seems to come up often. Now, that luck is backed up with work.
Well, luck is when preparation, you know, meets opportunity.
Right,
like that is
the
definition of luck.
Yes.
And I completely agree with that. And I know that I'm really one of the luckiest girls in the world. And, you know, I also learned even then, like I love the part that I did in my one and only. But I don't think anybody saw that movie, to be quite honest with you. I know that it played on HBO for a while, which was very nice. And I know that I got to meet and do a couple scenes with Renee, who already at that point, I think I had watched Cold Mountain and just thought she was phenomenal and was someone that I emulated, you know, someone that I wanted to be like. And those were great personal experiences. But that is not a movie, like I said, that people saw. That was not the point, you know, that you talked about, that kind of that turning point.
Right.
Whereas Castle, which was the little engine that could, you know, we got picked up for season one. And then we kind of kept chugging along, you know, season two, season three. But we didn't really become popular until like season 5.
I know you couldn't kill it with a stick. I mean, it just wouldn't go away.
It wouldn't,
because it had that unspectacular but solid following.
Yeah,
it was one of those shows that people just liked and continued to like.
Yeah, and then grew. It was very strange, especially getting into seasons like 7 and 8, where it just kept growing. It kept becoming more popular when typically that's, you know, things kind of start to peter off because you've seen enough of it. Like, I love Monk. I watched the first 4 seasons, but I didn't, you know, I petered off because I had seen 4 years of it, you know, and that was enough of Monk.
it was enough Monk.
But, you know, it's that type of thing. So, and I think I realized with that show, not so much the click, but the responsibility. The responsibility to a large organism and not just, you know, our cast, not just our producers and directors, but our crew, and realizing that this isn't me, this isn't, you know, us, you know, our little 20 nucleus of, you know, producers and actors, this is the 200 plus people that come in and build these sets and light it and have families and children. You know, it's, I realized the vastness of what a set was.
Mm-hmm.
Hang on, how old are you? I'm just going to keep to how old are you?
Because we've heard this. Jesse and I are nodding at each other.
Yes.
Because we've heard similar words from veteran actors. Robert Forster, I remember
Bob
talking
Bob
about this.
Bob was one of the first ones. But we've had
talking
we've
about
had...
Understanding that you are a cog in the wheel.
Yeah.
And that you're an important cog.
Mm-hmm.
But you are one of many.
Mm-hmm.
And that just what you said, that there's a responsibility mm-hmm. that goes along with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it was very mature of you to realize that.
Yeah.
I think I was probably... I think I was coming up to 18 when I realized that.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, in the beginning I was just excited.
It was fun.
Well, I didn't even understand how much it took to get a pilot made, not to mention a pilot getting its first season.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so around 18 I started, you know, asking questions of Lori Zaks in particular, who was one of our producers for a very long time, and her just walking me through it and then getting to talk with Nathan about not only Firefly that everyone loves and did like two seasons, but the pilot he did with Emma Stone.
Yeah.
That never went anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now the Academy Award winning, you know, Emma Stone, however you feel about that is, you know, neither here nor there. Just, it takes a lot to get to every step of this.
Sure.
That's one of our favorites is the overnight sensation who has been working for 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There too, we just had Nikolai Coster-Waldau on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one where it's 20 years of work for overnight stardom in Game of Thrones.
Right.
I always joke that if I have to read one more article talking about the up-and-coming Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's been up-and-coming since he was like five.
Third Rock from the Sun.
You know? But even before that, he's in a whole bunch of movies that people know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Angels in the Outfield.
Right.
Personal favorite.
Right.
But the thing is, there are so many people where that's the case.
You're
and
absolutely
you work and
right.
you work and you work, even for you. So
I
you've
have
been,
not hit, my point is, I have not hit yet.
Yeah.
I not think that I have gotten to that point. I have not felt it yet. I wonder if I will ever feel it, if I will ever be satisfied with the work I'm doing enough to...
Well, you don't have to.
Yeah.
You don't have to. Because,
I want to,
because
though.
We all want to. We all strive.
Mm-hmm.
We all aspire.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, we've got to do our job.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to stay hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And stay committed
mm-hmm.
and involved and engaged. And obviously you are. I mean, you can tell talking to you. You are.
I'm starving. I'm really
sorry. So, okay.
Starving.
So the dumb type questions.
Yeah.
The best part of working on a show for 8 seasons?
Continuing to find things about the character that are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really have to search for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, I enjoy that search. But I would get very annoyed with certain people who would complain.
Mm-hmm.
Who would complain about the writing or, oh, my character has done this, you know, for three... Why can't... I was like, it's your job to find what's continuing to interest you.
Huh.
Because our storyline does follow a formula. You know, Alexis Castle is Alexis Castle is Alexis Castle.
Yeah.
But her internal struggle or interests do change because she's getting older and she's living life and she's... going through these things. So every year evaluating, you know, how do I feel about my dad now? Because, you know, that was her most important relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And near the end, what kind of started developing, at least what I see, and some people probably mildly see, is a bit of a obsession with her father, being so afraid that he isn't going to come home, that he's really going to get himself hurt. Kind of like my boyfriend and I go on a lot of trips. And they're not very long trips, but we go, you know, to Hong Kong for 5 days and come back. And then we go off to Paris and a lot of things like that. And so we have this one dog that does not understand. And when we come home, is so, like, she wraps her little arms around my leg.
Whoa.
Because she does not understand. She sleeps on Alon's clothes when he leaves them on the ground because she does not want him to put them back on. And Alexis started to develop that a little bit with her father. Because I don't know if she necessarily loved being a private investigator, mm-hmm. but that allowed her to keep an eye
with him, yeah.
on her father
right.
and to be with him.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that I found, and those were the things that I was really excited to do in season 9, and mm-hmm. why I'm so sad that that went the way it did. You know, it was not handled well, but mm-hmm. it's what would have... I was excited to continue playing
yeah.
because of that.
It's too bad.
You know, yeah, it's too bad.
Now, did you ever talk to the writers?
Not too much. I let them write, and then I found and then I found my little things within that because they were good. I mean, I think mostly I just complimented them on mm-hmm. things that I liked. You know, I think especially through classes and through some. It's funny because I will call them younger actors, but they're my age.
Mm-hmm.
They like to improv, and they like to, you know, they like to come on set and go, ah, you know, this line, I think, what if I just say, hey? And I just always have
a writer's nightmare.
And I always had this understanding, and I would have to kind of dig to figure out where this comes from, and I'm sure some of it came from the show a little bit. A script takes a long time to make.
Mm.
And then by the time you're performing it, I mean, Castle went to Goldenrod every time. And, you know, to explain Goldenrod, that means there's like a pink revision, a blue revision, a yellow revision, a Goldenrod revision. Like, it goes into these every time.
If you see a finished script, it
yes.
looks like rainbow.
It does. It does. It looks like
loose leaf
hair.
Rainbow.
Yes, they keep bringing you more. That's actually my hair is, few people know, my hair is inspired by script changes.
A final script.
That's yeah. exactly it.
So, yeah, I can't stand when an actor has an added thought. For the most part, if they are on their own working with a director, and of course I'm not talking about a Pacino or someone like mm-hmm. that, I'm talking about, you know, actors kind of off the street.
Yeah.
You know, we can toy
but
with this.
You're yeah. an old soul, mm-hmm. and the trouble with being an old soul is that you're aware of these things, mm-hmm. and it means that you're not a typical...
I have no friends.
I have no friends. I get it. I really get it.
Yeah.
But that's it. When you are an old, it's one of those things. It's sort of like when you're in high school and they keep saying, wait till college.
Mm.
Everyone will understand you and cut lies. It's all lies. But it's that. And so because you're aware mm-hmm. of these pieces that mm-hmm. a lot of people are not aware of, whether it's because they're stupid or just because they're young and dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to be young and dumb.
Of course.
That's when you're allowed to be dumb.
I wish I could have been young and dumb.
I
know.
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I did some stupid things.
Yeah, we all have to do a couple of stupid. The only person who's
allowed.
Never been stupid, this one.
I'm
an angel child.
Yeah, right. So, how'd the Funny or Die piece come about?
Funny or Die. Oh my God. Yeah, Molly Quinn is perfect. That's the one. You know, that little thing is surprisingly funny. So I was friends with these guys, Clayton Ledoux, Will, I can't remember his last name. They were just little, they were friends. They were kind of like my big brothers, in
mm-hmm.
a sense. I grew up with 4 older brothers. My dad was a scout leader. I've always been very comfortable with boys that are, you know, just a little bit older than me. Like,
mm-hmm.
not even a lot, just, you know,
mm-hmm.
a little bit. And they were just some of those Texas boys that moved out here and were trying to get some stuff done. I thought they were nice. They wrote this script and were like, let's put it on Funny or Die. This was the very beginning of Funny or Die.
Mm-hmm.
This was not modern, hip, you know, Chloe Moritz doing Funny or Die. This mm-hmm. is grassroots Funny or Die.
Well, it's still there on YouTube. I was doing my
yeah.
my browsing,
yeah.
You know, in preparation for today.
Yeah.
And it came up pretty easily, and it's yeah. very fun.
It was fun, and that was the thing. Like, I just asked to borrow a trailer, and yeah, I liked those guys. I wanted them to succeed,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to help them, and I think yeah. I wanted to help because I feel like I've been helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't look down on help. I hope Mm-mm. that people realize that, you know, you don't have to do things on your own.
Right.
And if you have people yeah. around, you know,
right.
I'm glad they asked. And
yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and trusted me enough that if I said no, there would be a reason, but that I would probably say
mm-hmm.
yes. And
because yeah.
I had said no to them on other projects they did before, you know, that just weren't as good. But it
yeah.
was that honesty of like, look, keep coming to me. We'll find something that'll be fun. And yeah, it was fun.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
It's very enjoyable.
Thank you.
And you finally did get to do cartoon voiceover work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some fairly substantial cartoon voiceover work.
Indeed. I ended up, I guess, being kind of good at it. The first voiceover thing I did, which was kind of in that first year, I think I was, 13 or so, was this character named Chloe Rocks, she's still there, at all the Build-A-Bears. When you go to, do your certificate to make your bear, there's a little girl avatar with a red ponytail that walks you through it. And on the website, she does the same thing. And I spent... Oh, God, because they would redo it. So I spent a couple of years going into this booth periodically by myself, phoning in to the guys in New York, saying, press the keypad when you want to see these options. And on and, not fun voiceover. This was not fun voiceover. This was instructional.
You didn't have
voiceover.
To say your call is very important to us, did you?
Your call is very important to us. Please wait and someone will be with you directly.
I probably did.
I want to go into every Build-A-Bear now and purposely just turn up the volume really loud. Mm. It's a room of Molly.
It was a lot. And then Andrea Romano gave me my first real cartoon voice to do on Ben 10. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, she loved Nathan and had started watching Castle for him. Mm-hmm. She just called me up and said, do you want to do this, Eunice? And I watched Ben 10 because I was a child and because that was a popular cartoon. Mm-hmm. So I watched all of that. And I got to come in and do a couple voices on that. Mm-hmm. And then Winx Club took a little while. And I'll tell you, Out of all the projects I've done, live action and animation, even stage, Winx Club will probably always be up there in my top three, mm-hmm. because it. And I think about it all the time. It was a true girls' cartoon, and it was kick ass with their cute little costumes and their fighting crime and pollution and their fairies, everything about it, and the girls I got to meet through doing it. It might be the only time that I've actually felt that sense of a family within a production.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still close with I'm close with all of them, but actually really close, see them every week with mm-hmm. Two of them. And we did that for 5 years. We did three full length films and for so much of that show, a lot of it dubbed because it was originally Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And then an original stuff as well. It was a blast. I love Bloom. Bloom is the girl the young me wanted to be, and I got to be her. And mm-hmm. I really want to do more animation. It's a hard thing because you audition so much, or at least I do. It feels like for every 100 voiceover auditions, you get one callback, and then when you finally mm-hmm. get a role, it's an elongated process. But I've done my favorite. I've done Bloom. I got to be a part of Winx
Club. That's
cool.
Nice that you get to do that.
Now, you mentioned Dakota Fanning before, mm-hmm. As somebody who sort of preceded you mm-hmm. on this path that you followed.
Mm-hmm.
Are there actresses that you look to as role models, not necessarily for the parts they played, mm-hmm. but for the way they have steered their careers and, handled
Carrie
themselves?
Carrie Mulligan.
Mm-hmm.
Emily Blunt.
You want to mm-hmm. marry a Mumford.
I do want to marry a Mumford. Those are two of the best examples I can give. Mm-hmm. I think they're both strong and classic women at the same time. Mm-hmm. They are capable of being feminine and strong mm-hmm. When they want to be. And then also, let me make sure I get this name right, because there's a couple. It's Amy Adams who was in Nocturnal Animals, right?
Yes.
And also Amy Adams is in there as well.
Well, you can't do
that's
better.
Pretty much the best.
You can't do better.
Especially for a modern trifecta, because I can
sure.
also... Like, I love Mae West. I've read
plenty
of her books. I want to save Paramount, I want to, direct and star in all my own films. And,
I love it.
That as well. But it's funny... Especially in talking about her.
Wait a minute, I'm just digesting that you've read Mae West.
I told you.
I've seen every film.
This one.
That she's ever done. I mm-hmm. own all of them.
Mm-hmm.
In trying to explain your film buffery to my dad, I was like, no, she's one of us. She's one of us.
People, I'm she trying. Doesn't. She does not get credit. You know, people talk about in a contemporary sense. Mm-hmm. People talk about Phyllis Diller mm-hmm. and Joan Rivers, mm-hmm. And of course Lucille Ball.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there are so many women who are quite rightly admired mm-hmm. and held up as people who broke down barriers mm-hmm. and made themselves. What's the word I'm looking for?
Icons.
Yeah. I don't like using that word a lot, but they really are. They really are. Trailblazers.
Trailblazers.
Trailblazers, yeah. I would say, in fact. But Mae West precedes them all, mm-hmm. and not just as a performer, but as a writer.
Yeah.
She wrote all her own best material.
Yeah. As a writer and, I mean, also just as a person, you know, she took care of every person that ever worked for her. Mm-hmm. You know, when her driver started having trouble with his eyes, and I think he even became blind at one mm-hmm. point, she, you know, she owned all those homes around the Ravenswood, which yeah. she never owned that apartment complex, in case anyone does know any trivia. That is not true. She just bailed them out. Mm-hmm. But she
lived there.
She did live there, and she owned all the homes around it, and she... Mm-hmm. you know, continued to give him a salary and put him up in one of those homes. And she did this with everyone who ever spent any time with her. You know, she really had a sense of taking care of people. And I'll tell you, that's something that I want to be like her mm-hmm. more as a person than even as a performer. Like, I admire what she has done and all of her stage work before that, all mm-hmm. her vaudeville experience. And she, of course, started when she was a child, mm-hmm. you know, 7, 8, you know, doing mm-hmm. those little performances. But yeah, as a person, she was very genuine, and I would put her in the same category as Lucille Ball, real creators, mm-hmm. probably more mm-hmm. so than Phyllis Diller and Joan Rivers, who mm-hmm. both are incredible. But they really created. They really did.
There was everything. No one before them. That's the
yeah.
What they did
and
had not
been done. And there's no one like Mae West.
Mm-mm.
No one.
You know, there's only one Mae West.
Mm-hmm.
There's yeah. only one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you folks listening, particularly any younger listeners, have never seen Mae West, or maybe have only seen a photo of her somewhere in a
I hope you have.
History of movies.
Well, you know, the whole thing is how most people know her now is that she's mimicked in cartoons all the time.
Yes.
Right.
They have
right.
a character
that'll say... But are those even around
say,
anymore? Like Little Miss Chickadee? Like
every yeah, yeah. now and then, there will be a come up and see me sometime, like in some cartoon. And
that's
I realize...
Let me tell you my great disappointment, one great career disappointment. I spent 24 years on the Paramount studio lot mm-hmm. working at Entertainment Tonight. Mm-hmm. And we were in the Mae West building.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
At one point, for Paramount's, I think, 75th anniversary, they named all the buildings after people who were prominent in Paramount history. And we were on the second floor. So I wanted our business cards to say, come up and see us sometime.
Oh.
And they wouldn't do it.
You could have had personal
ones. What a
ones
golden
made.
Opportunity.
Right? Yeah, that's...
If you really wanted it bad enough.
Yeah, you could have done it. I'm disappointed.
Right?
Oh, well.
No, that's a great idea. And yeah, she's someone I look up to. But I try... It's funny. I try to be... I was trying very hard to be modern in my choices.
Oh,
I mean,
please.
Liv Ullmann is like another, like, especially as an actor.
Sure,
sure.
Is someone that I... And those are... I really have to... like research women too, because I tend to be drawn more towards male
sure yeah.
mm-hmm. performances
mm-hmm. like who?
Kevin Spacey,
mm-hmm.
Pacino, like mm-hmm. I already said mm-hmm. once before.
Well, there's a reason because
yeah, they're great.
Yeah, they're really wonderful, and I'm you know, it's hard when you watch so many movies.
Yeah. And we're putting you on the spot.
Your brain can get mushy. I will recommend to you, mm-hmm. we really enjoyed Billy Bob Thornton's Amazon show.
Oh, Goliath. Yeah. It's great.
And we'll see that. And that, to me, if you want to see women,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Nina Arianda.
Mm-hmm. She's fantastic. But Olivia Thirlby, who is someone who works consistently.
And I work with
But people
with
don't know who she is.
Yeah, she hasn't really hit yet.
She works a lot, and she's always good.
Mm-hmm.
She's
mm-hmm.
always good. I think the first time I really paid attention was the Whackness.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one of the first times it really made me. It's her and Josh Peck and Ben
Kingsley.
Oh,
and it's a really, you really like that movie.
I did
too. He's the reason I saw it. Which a movie about weed in New York in the 90s was not something I expected to come from my dad. it's a really good film.
A good movie is a good movie.
But that's Goliath, true. Goliath is something where I kept saying to people, someday. See, there's another Olivia Thirlby overnight success, right?
Well, not yet.
Someday.
Like, it's,
no, but, that, but that's
someday.
Somebody,
that's
someday
what
they're
going
to go. Oh, she's overnight success. Except that she's been making movies for years.
And Nina Arianda, of course, was the darling of Broadway. Several seasons ago, in the revival of Born Yesterday, I think she won a Tony Award for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a serious play, I can't remember which one, won the same season. And she's not yet known as a movie or television name as she should be. You want to see a good film that features her, Rob the Mob.
Okay.
With Michael Pitt and Griffin Dunn and a lot of other good people. Ray Romano's in it, too. That's right.
Okay. I know the name
Andy
of the
Garcia,
movie. I must have just
made
seen
by Raymond DeFilippo, who's made great New York movies for more than a decade. Rob the Mob. There's a tip for today.
Thanks.
Love it.
So do you want to direct? Do you want to write? Do you want to do those things?
Not yet.
Not yet?
I want to act.
That's allowed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I leave open what could eventually happen. There are a couple projects I would like to show run. Like, there are a couple things that I would like to own and build a team to make it, because I don't think that I can flesh something out as well as I can outsource to other people.
Knowing that, though.
But you could be a facilitator.
Yeah.
I can facilitate. I can manage. There are a couple of things like that I would eventually like to do.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, good. No, it's I think that you have an incredible handle on all of these things, and even just knowing that other people can do certain things better.
Oh yeah,
it's, you have to know your skills.
Well, I was just talking about this to our personal trainer, actually, who's a singer and trying to get into film and everything, and I've been thinking about this for a while, and I would love to know y'all's thoughts on this, since all these classic Disney films are animated films are getting, this revival in live action form. I'm already on that same boat.
I'm super excited about it.
Already on the
same
boat.
Can't wait.
So, one thing for me that's come up is The Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about it.
Yeah.
Sounds great. I'm not totally on board with how others have turned out, but, that would be a big opportunity. And it's fun to daydream, like, how something like that would even be made.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the thought, now I sing. I took private lessons from 7 to 19. I can technically sing. It is not my favorite. And there are people that are way better, than me at that skill. They make a very big deal out of these revivals that the leading lady be able to sing her own songs. And there, people get very upset about it. Now, in the animated films, it was always voiced by and sung by.
Mm-hmm.
Same person sang their song. Hunchback of Notre Dame is a great... All of them.
Yes. One actor would do the speaking voice, the dialogue.
Generally an actor of note.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that they can sell
another,
it on the name.
Another professional singer would do the song.
A professional singer.
That's when we were kids, Lion King, Simba was Jonathan Taylor Thomas, the speaking voice, and then they had a singer come in for him. Mm-hmm. But they could say, Simba... is Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Of course. Well, and it was, like, I just watched, and this isn't Disney, but I was watching Anastasia. Because
I love that movie, and I love the music in that
and
movie.
And I'm obsessed with Anastasia. Like, Anastasia is a character that I would like to someday play, not in that story, more so the woman who, because she was mentally ill, really thought she was. I think it's tragic and wonderful, and I hope I get a shot at being part of that story. Mm-hmm. But, that was a, what was her name? Who did that voice?
Meg Ryan.
Yes, it was Meg Ryan, who was great. And then, of course, again, song by...
Well, same. John Cusack was the love interest. Yeah.
So why, when it comes to these live-action remakes,
do they have
so upset? Like, I don't think it matters.
Well, of course, that's the opposite of but what they used to do as in West Side Story or King and I, where they would cast somebody who looked the part or who had the name value to help sell the movie and then not worry and just dub their voices indiscriminately. or there was the late Marnie Nixon who did the singing voices for Deborah Carr and King and I and Natalie Wood and West Side Story and so many others.
Funny totally how they all sound the same. Never occurred to me as a kid.
Oh, no.
Honestly,
You watch King and I, it's flawless.
It is flawless.
Deborah Carr is speaking her dialogue and then goes into Getting to Know You or one of those songs. It is seamless.
It's perfect. I didn't realize until much later my parents said, oh, no, that wasn't Natalie Wood singing. Oh, no, that wasn't so-and-so. What?
Yeah.
Especially when it was the same person.
Right.
Because I'm a music nerd.
Okay.
I can usually hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't.
Well, I'm just all for it. And I think that's a better thing to do anyway. Because I think you can also nowadays, and speaking specifically of Disney, you can even get a double promotion with like, here's
100%.
Let's just say, here's Ariana Grande singing, you know,
Someday My Prince
Will
Come.
World or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And also we have who's or what's her name, you know, doing the person. Like, I think that there's more room.
Absolutely.
Anyway, it's just something that, because people are so nasty on the internet
We'll just send out a little emphasis to any would-be producers out there that our guest Molly Quinn is willing and able to participate in your project.
In any way you want.
Yeah. Right. I told a friend of ours who's worked at Disney forever, I said, look, my goal in my life is to be a voice of something, even if it's one word.
Mm-hmm.
I will be a rock that says thanks. It's just one of those where, you want to just leave a little piece.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, let me be
immortal.
Let me be a piece of broccoli. That's a little annoyed.
I feel you.
I don't care.
I feel you.
Just one thing.
Hey, look, that's why I did Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Just begged James, who of course I've known for years, but let me just do something, and then he let me do something really cool. But it's that same type of thing.
But that's a notch in your gun belt there, you know.
Gun belt. You made a joke.
Gun belt.
You did that.
That's nice.
Good job.
G-U-N-N belt.
That
was on purpose.
Yeah, of course it was.
That was totally planned.
You know, film might actually be a click. Like being that giant of a film, even though it's the smallest, you know, little snippet possible.
But you're there.
Hey,
you're there.
I'm there with Howard the Duck.
You're a part of it.
You can't
you're
get a better part than that.
That's all right, that matters.
So Ms. Film Buff, if I were to ask you as we wind down our conversation to recommend, which is what we ask a lot of our guests, an unsung movie, a film you think deserves to be better known, that you happen to like a lot, what might you come up with?
The Shipping News.
Ooh, I second that.
Yeah.
It's
right there on
speaking of
on
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
And Julianne Moore. And the weirdest part, but it still works because she's incredible, Cate Blanchett.
Cate Blanchett.
Yeah, in a very funny part, all gothed out, but she, because she's so incredible, really makes it work.
You know, that film got a bum deal.
Yeah.
It was released by the folks at Miramax in a very last-minute fashion at the end of a calendar year, and then they re-edited it and wanted critics to come back and see, as I recall, a second version, which nobody had time or energy to do. And I really liked it just the way it was.
It's
based on a best-selling book.
Yes, and I don't know which version I've seen. I'm a thank God for Filmstruck. I pray to Filmstruck. You know, just really incredible. So I don't know which version I saw. I assume it's the re-edited, but it's just phenomenal. And Julianne Moore, her accent is. So it's funny when someone doesn't have to do something, when something is technically unnecessary and they do it anyway and they're so good at it. I mean, I feel like she should have won an Oscar for that performance. And the same with Kevin Spacey. He is more human in that part.
Well, he plays a part you shouldn't accept him in.
Yeah.
Because you know Kevin Spacey is smart as a whip.
Well, and Judi Dench, because she terrifies me from doing, is it Notes on a Scandal?
Sure, yes.
I'm terrified of her. And for her to play someone who is so giving and has hidden injury is someone else you should.
And for Spacey, though, to play a dull-witted man and have you believe it.
And I want to defend him. Like, you're saying that. I'm like, he's not dull-witted. He just wasn't raised right.
Right.
He didn't have a dad. Like, that's the thing. Like, I want to defend Kevin Spacey, and that isn't a position that you ever
It's
really
a good movie. Good movie. People ought to give it a shot.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Molly, thank you so much, not only for that recommendation, but for joining us today and being such a good conversationalist.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, guys.
And for your love of Mae West.
Yes, Mae West.
And if people want to find you, where can they find you virtually?
Oh, on Twitter. You can find me at MollyQuinn93, the year I was born.
That's depressing.
And, and then I'm just newly on Instagram, and it's very simple. It's all one word, Molly Caitlin Quinn.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We're new to it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're trying.
Yeah, Elon made me do it. It even says on there I was bullied into getting an Instagram.
That's what his Twitter description used to be, is my daughter said I had to get a Twitter, and here I am.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
And where am I?
On the Twitter.
Oh, that's right.
You're at Leonard Maltin. I'm at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and Instagram, and they can find you on Facebook. But most importantly, LeonardMaltin.com.
If you like to read, if you still like to read words, I write words at LeonardMaltin.com.
And his home address is.
Exactly. 555.
I'm a citizen of the world.
All right. You know, I like to, it's funny, I say the same thing about myself. Citizen of the world.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm really more of a citizen of the San Fernando Valley.
Are you working on anything people can look forward to?
You know, Last Rampage, it's coming out next month. We're super excited about that. And then my film, Newly Single, we just found out is having its festival premiere at the Tallinn Film Festival in Estonia.
Oh, my goodness.
Very excited about that.
That's fancy.
Yeah, I really love this film, and it's a part that... I don't know. I'm really grateful that our director, Adam Christian Clark, who also plays himself in this film, trusted me to do this part.
Congratulations.
Good for you.
Yeah, so excited about that.
Yeah.
And then auditioning. I still audition, guys.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
That's all
right.
I do.
All right. As they say in the show business, she's available.
Available.
All right. A working actress.
That's right.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, folks, for listening.
We'll see you next time.
See you next time. Bye-bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.